the outer gods, nebulous, influential, and utterly intriguing. Very few topics in Elden Ring are of more interest to the community than the outer gods, no doubt as a result of their enigmatic presentation and permeation through different aspects of the lore. Bloodborne presented the idea of cosmic gods to the Soulsborne community, and as a result, it is easy to view the outer gods through a similar lens. And this is entirely reasonable, given the massive cosmic elements present throughout the game, and the fact that the term outer god is a term used in the expanded Lovecraftian mythos. But is this the correct understanding of these beings? Or are we, as a Western audience, missing something? Is there something deeper that the outer gods are meant to convey? For whether you ascribe to the theory that the greater will is a supreme being or not, some of the interactions between the greater will's order and the outer gods makes our understanding of the latter confused. Instances where we see these apparently opposing forces playing a role within the Elden Ring's domain, or instances of contradictory information regarding Two Fingers and Empyreans. Do these outer gods in fact present something different? Concepts of fundamental laws made manifest, brought about through the power of the Elden Ring itself, only to find themselves excluded by the current order. In this video, we will do our best to answer the question of the outer gods by looking at it more carefully from a Japanese cultural perspective. So join me this week, guys, as we try and answer the question, what are the outer gods? But before we start, guys, remember that if you like Elden Ring lore, then please subscribe to the channel, as I have hours of Elden Ring lore content for you to enjoy. I was wrong. That is how I want to start this video, and it isn't the first time that I've admitted such a thing, and I do think it is important for me as a lore theorist and for us as a lore community to continually change and evolve our perspectives on certain subjects. In my last lore video on the Greater Will, I posited the theory that the Greater Will is the God with a capital G, and I stand by my premise that the Greater Will is something distinct from the outer gods. However, something that I acknowledge that didn't quite fit right was my characterization of the outer gods themselves. I posited that the Greater Will was a supreme creator god, and the outer gods were rival cosmic beings, akin to Bloodborne's old ones. Viewers were right in pointing out holes in this argument that I did not address properly, such as describing the outer gods as cosmic deities trying to corrupt the creation of the Greater Will. But as pointed out by commenters, the outer god of the Deathbirds, for example, is not a corrupting force. Rather, all we see of the Deathbirds is that they are guides of the dead and overseers of the funerary rites. I acknowledge that these types of questions did hinder my characterization of the outer gods as lesser cosmic deities to the greater will. And ultimately, it has led me to try and understand the outer gods and what they are really. To that end, I do think that we, of the Western lore community, have a lot to gain by tapping into the ideas being discussed in the Japanese lore community, and that is in part what I aim to do in this video. It is at this point I need to make it clear that some of these ideas are not my original ones. Rather, they came to my attention via the great cosmic Axolotl, a viewer who commented these ideas on one of my community posts, and in turn, they cite the famous Italian YouTuber Sabaco No Meiko as their original source in episode 38 of their Elden Ring co-op playthrough. So I will link that video below, and again full credit to Great Cosmic Axolotl for making me aware of such ideas and nuances. I am going to paraphrase the relevant comment while showing the original on screen. The term used in Japanese for the outer gods is Sotanaru, and this term is used to define beings outside of a group or system, and in this case, the Golden Order, and thus it is what makes them external or outer gods. The idea that they are cosmic beings is largely a Western understanding, and again, the Greater Will is never referred to as an outer god, and linguistically in the Japanese, it is more likened to the biblical god. And indeed, this was the main thesis of my Greater Will lore video, and I will link that below in case you haven't watched it. Carrying on with the comment, Great Cosmic Axolotl suggests that the outer gods are more closely aligned with the kami of Shintoism, divine manifestations of nature, which came into existence via the Elden Ring, as they are all connected to earthly concepts such as blood, disease, and death. To have this idea elaborated on and explained to me in more detail, I actually reached out to Subaku's translator called Mirko, a source of these exact ideas and a respected member of the lore community, and work with Subaku to provide translations for their videos, and so I am very grateful for their support in helping me with this video. They were able to confirm that this is indeed the prevailing opinion in the Japanese lore community, and I will quote them now and show the quotes on screen. As the commenter said, it is more than an idea of mine. It is one of the most popular interpretations in the Japanese community, and I, having played the game in Japanese, have found this interpretation more logical and concrete for some evidences in-game. The general idea we have in the Western community is that the Outer Gods are a group of cosmic deities that fight against each other for control over the lands between. But the more you delve into the lore, more you see that this theory is pretty weak. The key detail to understand is that even with a Western aesthetic, Elden Ring and other Souls games are Japanese games. Therefore, they mainly and heavily refer to Japanese cultural concepts, and kami is a concept not so akin to one we have in the Western world. Kami are more akin to natural forces, part of nature itself. They are water, plants, trees, sun, moon, snow, etc. The outer gods, in my opinion, and in the opinion of the greater part of the Japanese community, just as that. Powers, energies that flow through the world, and that creatures can channel these energies with prayers and rituals. So thanks again, Mirko, for providing that information. This idea immediately clicked with me, as it answers a lot of the issues that I have with my own conceptualizations of the outer gods. It makes them fit more neatly into some of the situations we see in Elden Ring. But what are the kami? Wikipedia defines them as the following. In Shinto, kami are not separate from nature, but are of nature, possessing positive and negative, and good and evil characteristics. They are manifestations of musubi, the interconnecting energy of the universe. These are interconnected spirits or entities that are of nature, part of the interconnected energy of the fabric of the world, and they are not gods in the traditional Western sense. Rather, they take form of concepts, fundamental concepts, important to life. And more importantly, they are not necessarily external to the greater will or the Elden Ring's world. They are in fact part of its creation, but are only external due to their exclusion from the current order's agenda. And indeed later we will look at other spirits in the world that may also be kami, but are not described as outer or external, such as the blue fairy of Shifra River. So where did the kami of this world come from? If they are part of the Elden Ring's order, as Mirko suggests, when did they come to be? In many videos I have discussed the idea that the arrival of the Elden Beast and the Greater Will is the beginning of all ordered life on this mortal plane. For those who need reminding of this event, I am of course referring to the description found in the Elden Stars incantation, which reads as follows. It is said that long ago, the Greater Will sent a golden star bearing a beast into the lands between, which would later become the Elden Ring. I believe that it was this arrival of the Elden Ring that ordered life as we know it, that it was its presence and influence that fractured the one great and stimulated diverse life. Mirko was also helpful enough to give their opinion, and the opinion from the Japanese lore community on this subject as well. And again, I quote them now. For this interpretation, about the outer gods being natural forces more than cosmic gods, it is implied they were born the instant the Greater Will sent the golden star into the lands between, being the Elden Ring. With this interpretation, it is implied the natural forces are born with it, i.e. the outer gods. Therefore, this theory proposes that these outer gods are in fact manifestations of the fundamentals of life, and are a result of the Elden Ring's ordering of life. They are the fundamentals of life made manifest. I referred the subject of gods to Last Protagonist, a friend of the channel and respected authority on the Japanese translation of Elden Ring. On the subject of outer gods, they said the following. It's kind of difficult to broach. Linguistically, the word for outer gods can be taken more along the line of being external, but it is also used to mean outer gods in Lovecraft's work. The issue is, in English, when we hear outer, we tend to think of outer space, but those connotations aren't as strong in Japanese. These ideas from Last Protagonist line up with Axolotl's comments and Mirko's information, in which they claim the common idea that in the Japanese lore community, the outer gods are only outer or external because they are external to the current order only, and that the connotations of outer space are less prominent in the Japanese itself. So to break down this theory, the idea posits that instead of the outer gods being rival cosmic beings competing for control of the lands between and the mortal plane, that they are instead a consequence of the Elden Ring, spirits that govern certain facets and elements of the world that was ordered by the Elden Ring, spirits of nature, entities that represent certain fundamental concepts. And they are as much a part of this world as anything else, but they are only external because they fall out with the current ruling order. Their exclusion is essentially political or ideological from those who exist within the lands between. This sort of idea helps me reconcile some of the difficulties I've had with perceiving the outer gods as rival cosmic beings. And the main example of this is related to Melania's story. We learn the following from Rani on the subject of Empyreans.
I was once an Empyrean of the demigods. Only I, Mikala, and Melania could claim that title. Each of us was chosen by our own two fingers as a candidate to succeed Queen Marika, to become the new god of the coming age, which is when I received Blythe, in the form of a vassal tailored for an Empyrean.
Rani, Mikla, and Melania are the Empyreans of the current era, and we learn that this was a position once held by Marika as well, via Malekith's remembrance. This implies that all Empyreans are chosen by the greater will as potential candidates to godhood, that all gods were once Empyreans, a sort of nominee system, and that these are the three nominees to take over Marika's reign. That is, of course, until the events of the Shattering, where the Greater Will will ultimately abandon the demigods, but that is, of course, another story and another tangent. But ultimately, what this means is that at one point, Melania was a successor candidate to take over from Goddess Marika. And this initially seems to mesh well with the information found in Melania's remembrance, for it reads, Mikala and Melania are both the children of a single god. As such, they are both Empyreans, but both suffered afflictions from birth. One was cursed with eternal childhood, the other harbored rot within. This is a detail that I have discussed previously in my Melania lore video, in which I had Last Protagonist verify with their own translation that it is likely the auspicious nature of Melania and Mikala's birth that led to their election as an Empyrean, i.e. that they are born of the single-bodied god of Marika slash Radagon. This again is reinforced by Melania's great rune, which reads, Melania is daughter to Queen Marika and Radagon, and her great rune should have been the most sacred of all. Again, this reinforces the idea that because Melania is born of Marika Radagon, the immortal Rebus ruling partnership, that she and her twin are special, and thus they were chosen to be an Empyrean alongside their twin Mikala. Yet this is made a little bit more confusing via a dialogue from Gowri, an adherent of the Order of Rot, who wishes Melania to ascend to Goddess of Rot. They say the following.
She was born an Empyrean carrying the Scarlet Rot. An Empyrean is no mere demigod. In the age of the Elden Ring and Queen Manica, the precious Empyrean was born, a new god to forge a new order.
I have always found the terms and language used here by Geri very interesting. I have always explained it away in my head that Malenia was born and elected an Empyrean, but later was infested with the Scarlet Rot. But that isn't really the truth, because in the Remembrance of Malenia, it says that she was born with this affliction. So she must have been elected as an Empyrean, despite the Scarlet Rot within her. And in fact, Geri even seems to suggest here that she was chosen to be Empyrean because she could be a potential goddess of rot. And so if that is true, then it really does contradict the kind of prevailing idea that the outer gods are rival gods, because if the god of rot is a rival god to the greater will that is seeking to usurp the greater will, Malenia was born with the Scarlet Rot. Why was she chosen as an Empyrean to succeed Lord Marika? In one of my favourite Ranitaskor Elden Ring lore videos, he covers a concept called the Greater Will Doesn't Care About the Golden Order. Their thesis being that the Greater Will is only concerned with a form of order being imposed, no matter what form that order takes. I will link that video below, but in essence, what Ranitaskor uses to illustrate this point is the engraving of the Elden Ring found within Fire Mazula, which clearly has a different, more chaotic and more full rune makeup than the more stripped back one of the Golden Order. And they suggest that the dragons and their Elden Lord, Placidusax, brandished the Elden Ring in a more early time and imposed a different type of order, far removed from what we would see in the later Golden Order. I too ascribe to this idea, for the Golden Order has now faltered and failed, and as the Tarnished, we are elected by the Two Fingers, and thus the Greater Will, to replace it with a new order. And we can rebuild the Elden Ring as we see fit, and establish a number of new orders depending on our beliefs. The Order of Fracture, the Perfect Order, Order of Despair, or the Order of the Duskborn. Whatever order we choose, we will still be Elden Lord, because order is being imposed, and it doesn't really matter what form that order takes. What if the Greater Will's intention on electing Malenia as Empyrean was that Malenia could be the goddess of the New Age, an age of rot sanctioned by the Greater Will? Until now, most of us, including myself, assumed that the Outer God of Rot was a rival cosmic deity, but as I've just explained, this doesn't really make sense given her election as Empyrean. Geri even describes this new order, which could be brought about by Malenia ascending to godhood, replacing Marika.
I have dedicated myself to her, and to the resplendence of the Order of Rot, the cycle of decay and rebirth.
If this theory is correct, that the Outer God of Rot is not a rival god, rather an entity that represents an element of life, disease or rot or decomposition, it is only outer because it falls out with the current established order. And indeed, Mirko has an excellent point to make on this idea of it being external to the current order. And again, I quote them. These gods, these kami, are considered outer because they are opposite to the Golden Order founded by Marika. If you notice, most of these outer gods are tied to the concept of death. Rot is decomposition, Flame of Frenzy is chaos and absence of order, and the Formless Mother is blood and loss of blood, etc. This is a very accurate and astute observation by Mirko, as the Golden Order is very much founded upon the removal of the Rune of Death and the confinement of Death and Death, as we learn via the Mending Rune of the Death Prince, which reads as follows. The Golden Order was created by confining Death and Death. Thus, this new order will be one of death restored. But now the Golden Order has failed. Queen Marika has disappointed the Greater Will, and now the time has come for a new order altogether. And thus Malenia and her potential Order of Rot was considered, and she was elected as an Empyrean by the Two Fingers. because the Outer God of Rot and its Scarlet Rot was not a rival cosmic entity to the Greater Will, merely a fragment or an element of the world that had found itself outside the current order, and with Malenia, the potential to reverse that position had come. Again, the idea of Malenia being elected as an Empyrean, a successor chosen by the Two Fingers, has always been an uncomfortable point for the lore for me, but instead, should we see the Outer God of Rot as an element of the world that was created by the Elden Ring, then these interactions and confusions begin to make sense. So while this helps us to understand some of the difficult and uncomfortable areas of the lore involved with the Outer Gods and their interactions with the Greater Will, we can't just ignore the fact that the Outer Gods is a term that is used in the Lovecraftian mythos. For even as I pointed out in my Greater Will lore video, YouTube creator Dugmanguy in a deleted translation video points out that the Outer Gods can linguistically be tied to the idea of Lovecraftian beings, the Old Great Ones. And even in English, the term Outer God is used in the expanded Lovecraft mythos, specifically in the Call of Cthulhu RPG game. So if I am claiming that the Outer Gods are more akin to kami, manifestations of natural forces, then how do we reconcile it with the clear allusions to cosmic beings? Well, in my Greater Will lore video, I highlighted the dialogue given to us by Hayeta, who, via the Three Fingers, gives us an account of how diverse life on this world came to be.
Thank you. I have touched them. The words of the Three Fingers, as your maiden, allow me to divine them. All that there is came from the One Great. Then came fractures, and births, and souls. But the Greater Will made a mistake. Torment, despair, affliction, every sin, every curse, every one born of the mistake. And so, what was borrowed must be returned. Melted all away with the yellow chaos flame, until all is one again.
The fracturing of the One Great is of course a very cosmic event in of itself. It is an event that is meant to be beyond human comprehension. So straight away this fracturing event, which would eventually lead to the formation of these kami, is in of itself a cosmic event, and thus as suggested by Cosmic Axolotl, these gods or spirits are a consequence of the fracturing itself, of the Elden Ring itself, and that, in a way, does indeed make them cosmic. And yet, despite these kami being more like manifestations of natural concepts instead of the traditional Lovecraftian cosmic gods, this doesn't mean that they cannot be worshipped or take form. For example, in Shinto, the kami known as Suratahiko Okame, the leader of the earthly kami, is depicted as a large man with a beard, and each of the kami can be communed with and worshipped in their own ways. Likewise, we can see the Outer Gods have their own adherents, despite being manifestations of elements. There are mentions of the Servants of Rot, Lords of Rot, and the Faithful of Rot led by the likes of Gowri. There are mentions of the Servants of Death and the Deathrite Priests. And of course, when it comes to the Formless Mother, we have the Mogwin Dynasty and the Bloody Fingers. And in addition, we get an example of the Outer God of Rot being able to manifest some kind of form via the Scorpion Stinger item description, which suggests that it was able to take the form of a scorpion. So I do want you to bear in mind that while I am proposing that these Outer Gods are manifestations of natural concepts, that doesn't mean that they don't still share commonalities with gods of other pantheons. But that being said, the way in which they manifest is what helps set them apart from cosmic beings, the way in which their elements are ever present in the world of Elden Ring. And again, this is a point made by Mirko, and again, I quote them. The Outer Gods, in my opinion, and the opinion of the greater part of the Japanese community, are powers, energies that flow through the world that creatures can channel with prayers and rituals. That would explain why, despite the Scarlet Rot being sealed inside a lake by the Blind Swordsman, it still manifested in Melania when she was born. It is a power, an element, in the Elden Ring universe. And again, this is another astute observation by Mirko. It has always been a bit of a mystery how the Outer Gods are able to interact so freely with this world, or why they interact in which the way they do. Instead, if you just see them as a component part of this world, everything does begin to make sense. And the more their worshippers and adherents spread their element, or help to cultivate that element in the world, the more that that outer god, that Kami, has a foothold in this world. And so with that being said, I do now want to analyse some of the main outer gods through this lens of the Kami. I think a good place to start would be with the outer god of Rot, as we have already discussed this in a decent amount of detail. So if we assess this outer god in this new light, what is this Kami's domain? Well, as we have already discussed, Gary describes it as a cycle of decay and rebirth. Indeed, we get further elaboration on this order via the Poison Mist incantation, which reads, "Those who dwell within poison know rot all too well. The death that begets life, that comes to all equally. That is to say, it is the cycle of rebirth put into practice. This is a cycle of life being born from death. And of course, this is best represented by the Scarlet Rot, the medium of the Outer God of Rot, a corroding force of death, and a medium through which this Outer God can enforce the idea of life coming from death and disease. For fans of the Warhammer universe, this idea probably isn't that hard to grasp, as this is essentially also the idea behind Nurgle, the chaos god of disease and pestilence, who doesn't really see himself as a god of death, but rather one of life, life that comes from death and disease, a god that sees viruses and bacteria as much a life as anything else. Like Nurgle's various diseases, I see the Scarlet Rot as something maybe more than a natural disease. It is a manifestation of the god itself, and this explains why it cannot be cured as a normal disease could be.
The rotting sickness that afflicts Millicent has no cure. When the Erdtree flourished, even the demigods could not stave off its effects, despite their nigh godhood.
The Scarlet Rot is not like the other poisons we find in the world. It is truly an unstoppable force, because it is the purest expression of this Kami's domain, and indeed we see the cycle of life from death anywhere we find the Scarlet Rot. While the Scarlet Rot eviscerates all other forms of life it touches, from this death comes new life, the Kindred of Rot, the silverfish slash cockroach looking enemies in the game. This type of life from death is of course reflective of our real world, where plenty of life, bacteria, and other insects, and carrion eaters, flourish due to the carcasses of other life forms. We see the Kindred of Rot rising from death like maggots, and we see the carrion eaters in the forms of the dogs and crows throughout Caelid. Caelid isn't as simple as a field of death, it is in fact a new ecosystem, where new life forms flourish and others die. As it is in our world, rot, decay, death and disease are just natural parts of life, and we should see this order of rot in the same way, that its Kami is just a manifestation of these natural concepts. And with that said, I now want to look at another natural force that I believe is a good example of a Kami that plays in to the Scarlet Rot's history and story. We had previously discussed the idea of Shifra River in my Scarlet Rot video. We highlighted a Reddit post by the user Nameless Singer, who confirmed that the word Shifra is Gaelic for fairy, and thus posited that the blue fairy from the Blue Dancer talisman was a manifestation of the river itself, and that they provided the tools necessary to the Blind Swordsman to defeat and seal away the Outer God of Rot. Looking back on this now, the Shifra River and the Blue Fairy should have been our first hint that the natural forces of this world manifest themselves like godlike beings or spirits, and that this Kami of the Shifra River is probably similar to the other outer gods, but instead does not find itself externalized by the current order. We of course learn that these two spirits came into conflict via the Blue Dancer charm, which reads as follows. The dancer in blue represents a fairy, who in legend bestowed a flowing sword upon a blind swordsman. Blade in hand, the swordsman sealed away an ancient god, a god that was wrought itself. So the spirit, or Kami, of Shifra River was in opposition to the Scarlet Rot. And this makes sense given the Shinto concept of flowing water and stagnation. I have discussed this concept in a number of videos, but in essence, flowing water in Shinto is representative of life, and stagnant waters, which in real life harbour disease and parasites, are representative of death. And this idea is actually further alluded to in the blue cloth set of the warrior starting class, and the description reads as follows. The blue colour of its fabric symbolises brisk waters, as fluid and flowing as the sword in the hand of its wearer. Just as still waters turn foul, stagnation leads to decay. Warriors must remain ever drifting. This warrior class is described as being part of a nomadic tribe in the class selection screen. So not only do they represent the flowing waters and thus life through their combat style, but also in their actual lifestyle, as nomads are always on the move. If you want a great exploration of these Shinto themes, then I would highly recommend Aesir Aesthetics' video on the Eastern themes found in Silent Hill, as they are similar to the ones found in Elden Ring. Regardless, given that both the Rot and the Shifra River represent these two important concepts in Shintoism, really does lend credence to the idea that kami are present in this game. And I'm sure this would be immediately apparent to the Japanese audience, but it's something that maybe just goes over our heads as a Western player. Mirko suggested that the outer god of Rot is an outer or external god because it is linked to the concept of death, and death of course has been very much confined by the Golden Order, and thus anything connected to it would find itself external, would find itself being an outer god. But the Golden Order hasn't always existed, so does that presuppose that the outer god of Rot was not always the outer god of Rot? And indeed, it is referred to in a different manner in one of the item descriptions, in the Blue Dancer Talisman, where it is referred to as the ancient god of Rot. An interesting semantic point to consider. But speaking of death, let us move on to the next of the outer gods on our list, and that is of course the outer god of the death birds. Now, this subject certainly highlighted one of the flaws in my original understanding of the outer gods in my Greater Well lore video. In that video, as I have said, I was trying to argue the case that the Greater Well differs from the outer gods, and clearly, as you see from the premise of this video, I still believe that to be the case. However, where that video was the weakest, in my opinion, was in the actual description or depiction of the outer gods, which at that point I understood to be cosmic beings that essentially competed with the Greater Well. To that end, I characterized outer gods as rival cosmic gods that were attempting to spread their influence in the lands between by corrupting or altering the world with the element that is specifically associated with each outer god, i.e. the Scarlet Rot for the God of Rot, or Blood for the Formless Mother. However, that obviously doesn't really work with the Deathbirds. And so I really appreciate everyone's input on that video, as it does help me learn and investigate things in new angles, so if you have any comments about this video, please leave them below. So with that said, let us re-examine this god through the lens of Kami, and how we can reconcile its role within Elden Ring's world. Firstly, we know the Deathbirds are connected to an outer god via the Twin Bird Kite Shield, which reads as follows. Shield featuring a vividly painted twin bird. The twin bird is said to be the envoy of an outer god and mother of the Deathbirds. This firmly links the Deathbirds and their death rites to this outer god, and thus are relevant for the content of this video. We learn that the death rites were funerary rites that existed before the Erdtree, and thus before the Erdtree burial would usurp their position. We learn this via the explosive Ghost Flame sorcery, which reads as follows. In the time where there was no Erdtree, death was burned in Ghost Flame. Deathbirds were the keeper of that flame. With the idea of Kami now firmly explained, this now makes sense. This outer god is representative of death and guiding spirits to the other side. In my video on the Deathbirds, I likened them to the concept of a psychopomp, spirits whose purpose is to guide the dead to the afterlife. The explosive Ghost Flame description describes them as the keeper of these Ghost Flame pyres, and we learn that these pyres burned in graveyards via the Death Poker. And furthermore, we learned that priests assisted these Deathbirds in these rites via the Death Ritual Spear. Deathbirds are symbolic of death in the world of Elden Ring, as much as the skull may be for us in our world. This is something we see in the Ravenmount assassins, who take on the appearance of the Deathbirds, as though to represent death itself. The reason they are symbols of death isn't just because of the Deathbirds' prominent role in administering death at one stage, it is because they are spirits born of the Kami of Death itself, manifestations of the fundamental elements of death. Again, the theory that the outer gods are Kami just makes more sense because it makes everything fit more neatly. The reason Deathbirds are symbolic of death is because they are of death. And while the Deathbirds and their outer god once highlighted a weakness in my argument, I think they also highlight a flaw, or at least fit uncomfortably, in the theory that the outer gods are merely cosmic beings. Why would the outer god of the Deathbirds come to a rival outer god, i.e. the Greater Wells, world, merely just to play a role in that world, to assist in the shepherding of the dead of that world? And some may see it just as a clumsy attempt to shoehorn some cool ideas about death and coolly designed bosses into the game. No, again, I think the idea of outer gods being Kami, spirits and manifestation of fundamental laws of this world, again makes more sense. The outer god of death fits into this world before the Erdtree, administering death as part of the Elden Ring's creation. And for many within Elden Ring's lore and world, they understand that the Deathbird is the truest symbol of death itself. With the Golden Order having confined death and subsumed the processes of death via Erdtree burial and removing death altogether, it is no wonder that the Deathbirds have found themselves pushed to the fringes of this world. And indeed, one can't help but notice their shattered forms, perhaps connected to their irrelevance and externalization with the confinement of death. Their form reflects their lack of purpose or their confinement from the order of the world. And now with that said, I want to move on to the most visceral of the outer gods, the Formless Mother. I think that the two prior outer gods were more important for the discussion, and that to a degree the Formless Mother fits more easily into the template of Kami. However, that doesn't mean that there aren't some opinions of mine that I will be reforming from my Lord of Blood lore video based on this new Kami theory. In that video, I painted the outer god as most do, a cosmic deity beyond our comprehension that chooses blood as its medium to communicate and interact with the mortal plane, and ultimately usurp it with a god and lord of blood. However, with the introduction of the ideas of Kami, we can begin to formulate an understanding of this being as well. While there is an obvious connection to blood, I feel Mirko is onto something when they have tied all of the outer gods that we know of to a form of death, and in this case wounding as to cause bleeding, a more different aspect, a more visceral aspect of death. For example, the incantation Blood Boon highlights the Formless Mother's relationship not only to blood, but specifically to wounding, as it reads as follows. The Mother of Truth craves wounds. When Moog stood before her, deep underground, his accursed blood erupted with fire, and he was besotted with the defilement that he was born into. Blood is of course one of the most important fundamentals of life, a potent fluid that is essential for any living thing, and thus the spilling of it is indeed tied to death. But blood is also an important facet of life, and thus the Formless Mother appears to be the kami of blood and blood shedding. But this is why Omen, like Moog, are such powerful tools for the Formless Mother, as the accursed blood of the Omen is far more potent as blood than regular blood, and thus is a more powerful instrument for this kami. However, there is another entity that is closely tied to some of these ideas that will need to be addressed here before I move on, and I refer to the Blood Star. Now, I have essentially tied the Mother of Truth to blood and the shedding of blood, and there is one particular region of this world that really feels defined by shedding of blood, and this is the Land of Reeds. This is the region from which the Samurai starting class owes their lineage, and we learn a fair bit about this land from the armor description of the Samurai, which reads as follows. The Land of Reeds has long been locked in a miserable civil war, during which time it has remained alienated from the cultures of its neighbours. Little wonder that the entire nation has succumbed to the blood-soaked madness, or so it has said. I discussed these ideas in my starting class lore video, but I find the description of this conflict to be truly fascinating. While the idea of a civil war in a region clearly based on medieval Japan is most likely a reference to the real-world Sengoku era, the era in which Sekiro is based, I think there is something else here. The term blood-soaked madness suggests that the warfare may not be entirely mundane or normal, and that another force may be encouraging this constant shedding of blood. Indeed, the Land of Reeds is almost entirely characterized by blood. For the Reedlander appearance default, in the character creator, tells us that this is a land in which blood is a common sight, and we know from all of their weapons that they are designed specifically to emphasize blood loss on their opponents. This blood-soaked madness is best personified by one of the most infamous among their number, Okina. We learn of this legend via his mask, which reads, "The more he sharpened his mind, the more the absurdities of the world came into stark relief. And so Okina renounced it all and rose to a higher plane. There was only himself, his katana, and its mastery. Before long, Okina became a demon of a swordsman." Okina really highlights what I am getting at here, that the shedding of blood, for some, was embraced with a sort of zeal that is almost religious in nature. This item description describes Okina as ascending to a higher plane, as if he is an instrument of a higher force. In a way, this is true, for through Okina's blood shedding, he is indirectly honoring and empowering the kami of bloodshed, the Formless Mother. Thus, it makes sense that he would come to the attention of her greatest servant, Moog, the Lord of Blood. And we learn of this meeting via the Rivers of Blood item description, which reads as follows. When Moog, the Lord of Blood, first felt Okina's sword and madness upon his flesh, he had a proposal to offer Okina the life of a demon whose thirst would never go unsated. It makes sense that the Lord of Blood would raise Okina up and harness his prowess for bloodshed. The more blood that is shed, the more his agenda is progressed in having the kami of blood at the centerpiece of the next order. That is all well and good, but there is a connection between the blood-soaked lands of the Land of Reeds and the Blood Star. We hear of this mysterious force, the Blood Star, via the Thorn Sorceries, the Briars of Sin and the Briars of Punishment, and they both read the following. The guilty, their eyes gouged out by thorns, lived in eternal darkness. There they discovered the Blood Star. These guilty are of course the Thorn Sorcerers that accompany the Order of the Fire Monks, and according to the item description we just read, they were able to command these Thorn Sorceries after they themselves were blinded with thorns, and in their eternal darkness, in their blindness, were able to commune with this entity known as the Blood Star. In a way, this star is connected in a similar fashion to the way in which primeval sorcerers commune with the stars, though in a more bloody and visceral way. I discussed this in my Primeval Current lore video, but in essence, I discussed how the primeval sorcerers are able to view the abyss of space in which stars are born through connection with the primeval current. This blood star also seems to exist in a sort of abyss, the abyss of blindness, but specifically connected to the blindness that is caused through violent means, through eyes being pierced by thorns. And this may make us wonder, does this blood star have a tie to the Mother of Truth? But why does it connect to the Land of Reeds? Well, the starting samurai class wields the Red Thorn Shield, and these red thorns can only symbolise one thing, the Briars of Sin, and by extension, the Blood Star. Is it a coincidence that both the Mother of Truth and the Blood Star are connected to this bloody region? Are they the same thing, or do they just draw from the same well? I leave it to you to decide, but one thing that I would suggest is that some kami appear in different forms, so it could be that this is the Mother of Truth in a different form. However, there's also the idea that there are different kami for the same fundamental elements, i.e. there are multiple kami of earthly elements. So both the Formless Mother and the Blood Star could be seen as connected to blood, and that they are simply kami that share a similar class. I highlight the similarities, and I leave it to you to decide whether these two are linked or distinct entities. A question that people keep asking me in comments or in my community posts are, do I think the Fell God or the Moon or the Stars or the Blood Star are outer gods? And quite frankly, my answer had been, I am not sure. My previous understanding of the outer gods as cosmic beings made it fairly unclear what would fall within this definition and what did not. However, with this new understanding of kami as spirits or manifestation of natural forces, I am more free to give my opinion. Yes, I most likely believe that these forces, such as the Fell God and or the Moon, could be akin to kami, manifestations of certain fundamentals. The announcement trailer for Elden Ring many years ago now stated that the Elden Ring commanded the stars, and so while we may view them, the stars, as cosmic powers, they too are part of the Elden Ring's world. And so should they too not have a spirit that guides and binds them? We learn via the hammer item description that smithing originated amongst the giants, and the vessel for the Flame of Ruin that the fire giants guard is of course known as the Forge. Perhaps the Fell God is the kami of metalwork, industry, blacksmith, or simply fire. Not evil, just a force that was painted as evil by Marika's ruling order because it had posed a threat. The Fell God versus the Erdtree Order, the Shifra River versus the Scarlet Rot, the Golden Order versus Death. We have seen these as struggles between great cosmic beings, but I believe we are wrong. These conflicts are just political, based on the desires and ambitions of those who impose their order upon the mortal plane. They are just opposing forces, but opposing forces of the same system. All the forces behind them, all of these outer gods, fairies, ancient gods, and spirits, are all part of the same system. They are kami, of a world commanded and forged by the Elden Ring. They are the manifestations of the building blocks and elements of this world. But this of course leaves one massive elephant in the room, the Frenzied Flame. If it too is an outer god of this world, then how does it fit in? These questions, my friends, are the subject for its own video, and indeed this will be the subject of my next video. So thanks guys, that is my take on the outer gods, and how we can maybe finally explain their place within the lore and world of Elden Ring. Please let me know your comments below, as they did really help me last time in changing my opinion on certain things. And if you liked this video, please consider giving it a like, as it helps out the channel immensely. And obviously subscribe if you like Elden Ring lore, as I cover Elden Ring almost exclusively at the moment in long form Elden Ring lore essays. If you'd like to support the channel in other ways, I do have a Patreon and memberships. If there are any particular subjects you want me to cover that you haven't seen covered anywhere else, or covered on this channel, please let me know in the comments below. But until next time guys, I will see you in the steps of the Moguin Palace. Take care, and have a nice day.